You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
Josh Nelson is with me. We're going to talk about Whiplash. It's heavily concerned with music, but the call's flowing in already thick and fast. Joe from Richmond's called. Favourite concert scene, Joe?
Oh, you can't go past the Blues Brothers and the concert scene where they were singing Everybody and John Candy ordering 3 orange whips for the state troopers and himself.
You mean this one, don't you? Yeah, okay. Orange whip, 3 orange whips for Joe, Josh and me. Ooh, let's get that.
We would especially like to welcome all the representatives of Illinois' law enforcement community who have chosen to join us here in the Palace Hotel Ballroom at this time. We certainly hope you all enjoy the show. And remember, people, that no matter who you are and what you do to live, thrive, and survive, there's still some things that make us all the same. You, me, them, everybody. Everybody.
We haven't got time to play the whole track. But you can just dress up and go and see it next time it's on at the Astor, because Josh will be there. He's the one who's tearing up all those bits of newspaper to make the real mess that the Astor people hate cleaning up. Josh, let's talk about Whiplash, which is the reason we're talking concerts. We've got a small segment of the film, but give us the basic setup.
Okay, so the basic gist of this film, we have a 19-year-old drummer at a prestigious music school in New York, and he's upgraded to the number one jazz ensemble, which is ruled over by a man called Fletcher, played by J.K. Simmons, who you mentioned earlier.
J. Jonah Jameson.
Indeed. Who has some, I guess you'd call them, extreme methods for motivating his musicians.
Okay, have a listen. This happens. He's trying to get his student to drum precisely the rhythm, precisely the speed that he wants, and he throws a chair at him in fury. Have a listen.
Why do you suppose I just hurled a chair at your head, Neiman?
I don't know.
Sure you do.
The tempo?
Were you rushing or were you dragging?
I don't know.
Start counting.
5, 6, 7.
In 4, damn it! Look at me!
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3.
Now, was I rushing or was I dragging?
I don't know.
Those little snapping noises, by the way, he was slapping his student's face. It's pretty vicious. This is a what? The brutal teacher actually brings him to some higher plane of musicianship? Or what's it about?
Well, that's his motivation. That's the driving force. But, I mean, it plays on the kind of the master-slave dynamic. It plays on the ethics of how far should you push someone towards greatness? Does the end justify the means? All those sort of ideas. But particularly that seem to circle around music and the idea that someone can only be great through having just a singular devotion to their craft. I only saw this afternoon, and I think it's a pretty extraordinary film. I think in a couple of months we may be talking Oscar buzz for some of the lead performances.
Oh, okay.
The editing of this film, the music, not surprisingly, is really remarkable, particularly if you've got a penchant for jazz. You know, the first half of this film, or sort of the first two-thirds, actually, it reminded me a lot of the first half of Full Metal Jacket. You know, that extreme situation where you have the drill sergeant, and this is the way he treats, you know, he treats all his musicians in the same way that Kubrick has the drill sergeant treat the new recruits in Full Metal Jacket. And then as the narrative goes on, it becomes almost the battle of wills. And what I think is so nuanced about this is the script is really great, but it has the nuance of the lead character is 19 and he is impetuous. He shifts from completely insecure to arrogant and then back again. And the script really captures that. And the performance of the young guy, Miles Teller, who I haven't noticed before in any major production, although he's done over a dozen films.
Right.
In fact, I just noticed before coming on air that he's been cast as Mr. Fantastic in Fantastic Four 2.
They're rebooting that again, right?
Yeah, okay. So maybe it's a prequel and he's going to be the young Richard Reed. But yeah, I'm assuming just from what I saw that he has experienced playing the drums before, because it doesn't look like they're faked. I mean,
he must have some basic musicianship.
Yeah, and they keep the camera on him and they don't cut to close-ups to cheat the fact that he's not playing. And there are scenes where you have, and it becomes almost like a boxing match, you know, the blood and the sweat dripping onto the drum set as the Simmons character pushes and pushes and pushes.
So this is really about devotion and discipline and fine craft.
And building up like a boxing like a boxing genre film towards that the concert film at the end when everything will, is kind of that make or break moment, perhaps. And yeah, this film really won me over. I mean, it's hard to find a flaw with this film, really, because it works on so many levels.
Is there much side stories, side plots, love interest, or is it just student-teacher intensity?
No, there's a couple of side plots that are very much background. There's an attempt at having a love story, but it's deliberately shelved because of, to weave back in with this idea of, I'm sorry, this is the 19-year-old saying, I'm sorry, I need to be devoted to my craft. We can't start a relationship, you know, after just a couple of dates. And then the relationship with the young guy's father, Paul, played by Paul Reiser, who we haven't seen for quite some time. You know, old Mad About You days.
Yeah, yeah. And Aliens.
He's the sleazy corporate guy in Aliens.
Yeah, right.
And he's good as well. But yeah, he's there, I guess, as the alternate sort of the good father, the parental, the kind father. And then you have the bad father. Yeah.
Okay, so it's a good film.
Yeah, really polished drama. The music's fantastic. It has such a visual energy in terms of the editing. Yeah, I really, really... I'll be surprised if this is not in my top 10 films of the year.
Okay. Whiplash is the name of the film. I was looking at E.K. Simmons earlier today. He's got an odd way of distinguishing himself. He's been in every, I think, NCIS franchise and all these sort of... He's clearly very, very busy. Hasn't been in too many big films, but he's obviously an in-demand TV actor, animation voice, those sorts of things.
He's often one of those guys that's the supporting character or the character actor or the kind of the slightly wacky sidekick, particularly with say, Coen Brothers films.
He's in one of those, isn't he? Which one's he in?
Burn After Reading, I think. Right. I always remember him as the loving father in Juno. I think he's the stepfather of Juno, or he's the real father. And he's such a wonderful kind of gentle presence in that film. But looking at him in this, I mean, with the shaved head.
He's terrifying in this.
He's utterly terrifying.
Film. Very scary. Look, Whiplash is the name of the film. We're after your favourite concert scene or favourite concert film. And can I just say, I am so glad that someone mentioned this because I didn't think of this one. Now, this one's hardwired into me because I saw it when I was young. But the final concert scene from Fame. Singing, dancing, and emotion. I think it's, you know, that song, I Sing the Body Electric. I tell you, that gets me every time. I only have to hear that song and I'm however old I was again, you know, 10 or 11. And, yes, you can do it. It's, you know.
You're a sucker for leotards, right?
I heard this amazing story about Flashdance.
Yep.
Now, I can't remember what's her name? It's not
Jennifer
Irene Carr. Jennifer Beale.
Yep.
So apparently the derision in Hollywood around whether an actress is, I can't use the word on the radio, but, you know, effable. So, right. And the currency of that term in Hollywood comes from Flashdance because they couldn't decide between Jennifer Beale and Demi Moore. And apparently the producer of the film, there were some tradies working nearby and he just walked outside with the two pictures and said to these two tradies, I think they call them Teamsters in the States, you know, which one would you like to, you know? Yeah. And they all pointed to Jennifer Beale and he went right, boom. And that apparently was the beginning of Hollywood's even further descent into using that as a pure mark of whether anyone should be cast. So look, that's a bit of a sidebar. Let's talk concert films. Ray's called from Altona with a concert scene. Oh, I haven't seen this. Ray, hi there.
Hey, how are you, gentlemen?
What's yours?
It's 24-hour party, people. Pretty much any scene where it's got reenactments of the Joy Division or Happy Mondays concerts, which is fantastic.
That's Steve Coogan, isn't it?
It is indeed, yes.
I need to see that. So that's worth seeing, hey, Ray?
I think so, yeah. Like, especially because it covers that awesome time of music in Britain.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, it's the root of a whole lot of the music that we listen to today. 18 minutes to 5 o'clock on 774 ABC Melbourne. Josh Nelson's with me. We're talking about Whiplash. We've got another film to get through, but your favourite concert films. And by the way, watch that guy you just mentioned in the TV series Oz, says this texter, and you will change your mind. Yes, E.K. Simmons is in Oz. Oz is sort of the Before the Wire and around the time of West Wing, even, a really violent but incredibly powerful. And Carmela Soprano, Edie Falco,
yeah,
she's in it as well. Oz is a fantastic TV series, really the beginning of that.
Gritty HBO.
Yeah, that third wave, whatever you call the fantastic bits and pieces of TV that we have. Let me read some of your texts. Oh, wow, great memory. I saw Fame on my 18th birthday. Loved it for years and years. I'm with you, Jenny. Fun fact about Paul Reiser, he played the drums on the theme song of Mad About You. There you go. Didn't know that. This is Spinal Tap, of course, and A Mighty Wind. Yes. It's almost become a cliche, but it's just so good. It's just really up there as a concert scene in a film. Best concert scene, I haven't seen this yet, Nick Cave in the recent film 20,000 Days on Earth. Truly incredible. A few of you mentioning School of Rock as well. And another honourable mention, this would be one of Josh's favourites. Best concert film is without doubt Stop Making Sense by Talking Heads, visually and musically stunning. That's from Pete and Ballarat. Yes, seen that?
A restored print is about to play at Acme in the coming weeks, so that's good timing.
Oh, I'd go and see that.
Restored 4K, David Byrne on the big screen.
Wow, okay, I like it. Look, I try to get to more of your texts as well, 0437 774 774. Someone saying, it's pretty daggy, but I like it. Rattle and Hum, the U2 film. Okay.
U2 3D, the IMAX film, was pretty good too, actually.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay, never saw that.
Yeah, very
that was
impressive.
More recent, wasn't it?
4 or 5 years ago now, but yeah, recent-ish. Okay. Yeah.
Well, it's more recent than the Rattle and Hum.
Indeed.
And someone else also nominating the Zoo TV documentary. That was good, actually. That's a U2 one that is not bad. Another concert film nomination from Steve in Warburton. Hi, Steve.
Hi, g'day, mate. The Band.
Oh, the movie.
You said it had Joni Mitchell, Van Morrison, Bob Dylan.
And good music, well done.
Dr. Hawk. Yeah, it was good.
Okay, I must keep that one in mind. All these films I haven't seen. I actually saw, on that era, I saw Jimmy Fallon singing last night with Barbara Streisand.
Oh, wow.
And that was actually quite amazing. That was.
She mocks him at one point, doesn't she?
She does.
You're cutting in.
She's really, really funny.
Good.
Has she had a lot of work done? Absolutely. Has she still got a great voice and is she really, really funny? Totally. No end of discussions around women, imagery, Hollywood, those sorts of things. I want to get on to other films. But Andrew's called from West Footscray with another good concert film idea or proposal. Yes, Andrew, what is it?
It's by the Beastie Boys, and R.I.P. NCA, who died last year. But they did a concert DVD where they handed out, I think it was about 30 camcorders to everyone in Madison Square Garden.
I like that.
And they basically... MCA, the guy who died, he was also a director.
Yes.
And he cut it all together. And they did the whole concert end to end.
With everyone's camcorders in the crowd?
Yeah.
Okay, Josh has seen that. Was that good, Josh?
Yeah, it was really, really kind of groundbreaking for the time.
Right.
It was when the digital technology was starting to become kind of more consumer-friendly,
yeah,
and it
okay.
was let's give the audience's perspective of what the concert feel is actually like.
Fantastic. Yeah, and it's called IFing Shot That, is it?
Yeah.
Okay, I like that, Andrew.
It's funny. They've got like scenes of just people during the ad breaks, you know, going to the bathroom and things like that.
Okay,
but also,
voice.
The rumour goes back after they had finished filming it, the Beastie Boys returned all the camcorders.
To the shop?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true, but it's a great story, Andrew. I love it.
You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
My mom always said life was like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
I have a special place in my film pantheon for Forrest Gump, and sad to say it's at the very bottom of the list, but it's being re-released, isn't it, Josh?
It has been re-released in IMAX format. It's been restored. Can you believe it's 20 years since Forrest Gump was released? Look, I'm going to begin with a confession. I saw this a number of times at the cinema as a teenager and thought it was the most wonderful film. I was completely seduced by the story of the simpleton southerner who crisscrosses America's sort of tumultuous historical period from the late 50s to the...
It's like a bad version of Zelig, isn't it?
Early 80s. It is very Zelig-like, actually. I hadn't made that connection. And then I wrote a piece on it about 5 years ago, and I was pretty scathing about it, particularly in terms of the way it avoids the political realities of the 1950s and 70s and the way it differs from the book. The Winston Groom novel is deeply satirical, and the satire here is a bit of an afterthought, and it's really rampant sentimentality. Look, seeing it again...
Saccharine sweet sentimentality.
It really is. I saw it again this week, and you know what? I'm now in a kind of a middle ground where I can acknowledge the political issues with it, the issues of representation, particularly in terms of the female characters and the African-American characters. And yet, I think the fact that it's so... the historical fantasy elements are so out there, it's sort of almost hard to criticize it when we have films, particularly on a weekly basis, coming from Hollywood, which are really historical fantasy, masking themselves as a kind of representation of the truth.
Based on a true story.
Yeah, indeed. So, look, and this film has a lot of charm. The one actor, the performance that really stood out on this rewatch was Gary Sinise.
He's fantastic.
He's remarkably charismatic in that film. I mean, even though it was Hanks with the Gump character and Robin Wright who sort of got the credit at the time.
But Gary Sinise got a lot of... I mean, this was a breakout film for him in some ways, wasn't it?
Look, it really was. And it's kind of a shame that he seems to have disappeared from the A-list.
He popped up in one of those NCIS franchises, didn't he?
Oh, he did too. Yeah, you're right. But look, on an IMAX format with the sound and the screen, and it looks amazing. Like, I don't know whether it's just the restoration or the fact that the technology at the time, which was pretty groundbreaking in terms of that inserting Forrest into those historical footage and those sequences, it really holds up quite well. And look, you know, this film is unashamedly sentimental. And I think if you're willing to go with that, then you will fall in love with Forrest all over again. In fact, the audience I was there was, I think, a mix of people who'd seen it before and parents who were bringing their kids to see it for the first time. Yep. So it was interesting to see it in that kind of context as well. Look, you know, it's a love it or hate it film. And I think
did it win Best Film?
It won Best Picture, it won Best Actor. I think it won a slew. And you look at the films, and this is always one of the years that people bring back in terms of the Academy not doing its job properly. Pulp Fiction was that year. The Shawshank Redemption was that year. And there are a few other films in 1994 as well.
Why didn't they give Best Film to Shawshank Redemption?
You know, it was such a flop at the time. Even the critical reception wasn't kind, terrible. And then it's got that sort of second life after VHS.
Eternal life, it's not a second life.
Oh, that's just true. It's everyone's favorite film of all time. You know.
Okay, so look, Forrest Gump is back, re-released in IMAX. If that's your thing, a few of your texts, you bastards, you can't bag Forrest. That's just nasty. That's from Greg in Ballarat. Ooh, I like this text on concert scenes in films. The Commitments. Who could forget Mustang Sally? That's from Gavin in Brunswick. Yeah, that's a really good one to remember. And Robert in Bacchus Marsh says, a concert in Glad Rap, Bad Boy Bubby. Which
thankfully, someone mentioned it. I was hoping that
would... I only mentioned that because, and look, I am so loathe to mention other radio stations, but there is someone who broadcasts on air at the same time as John Fain, and there was just a hysterical exchange, which I nearly played on air, when the caller rang up and said, Bad Boy Bubby, and the radio host said, oh, Bad Boy Bubby, what's that? And he's a fine broadcaster and a fine journalist, but I wanted to seize that bit of sound and replay it on air, but I thought that a little bit cruel. But I was glad that we're not the only people who get calls about Bad Boy Bubby, that it's deeply scarred in the consciousness of
Do you think that'll get a 20th anniversary IMAX re-release?
I hope so. Hope so. Nicholas Hope could sort of come along and have a word to us all. One we haven't mentioned. We see if you remember this. You might remember this little Coen Brothers film. One of my faves. Good soundtrack, this one. Have a listen. In the name of constant sorrow, I've seen trouble. Hot damn! This is Sock Bottom Boy! I like that. One of the best, I think, a very good and long-selling soundtrack. And because we're talking concert films and because we've mentioned this one, a little bit of David Byrne. I think when I saw this, I struggled with it because I was about 13 when I saw this film, but there's no doubt that this song caught my attention. Have a listen. There is that famous CBGB's flyer, which has a triple bill, I think, of Talking Heads, Blondie and the Ramones, something like that. Way back when culture was kind of different.
Oh, I was just going to jump in quickly. So I said earlier that Stop Making Sense, the documentary that that's taken from, is showing at Acme soon. Acme actually has another concert film that opens on Monday, Björk Biophilia, in Concert.
I see that, yes.
And it's remarkable. In fact, it has an introduction by Attenborough because they did a wonderful documentary when Attenborough met Björk, which aired on TV a couple of years ago. It's a fantastic concert film.
Okay. That'd be good. Bjork, live, Acme, and you can see Talking Heads as well. Josh, thanks for coming in.
Pleasure.
Josh's blog is at filmology.com. It is spelt with a P-H.